Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 653, Touching Bases with Daniel Hopsicker. This is being recorded on November 16th of the year 2008. And once again, it's my pleasure and privilege to bring back to our airwaves Daniel Hopsicker, the kingpin of the madcowprod.com website, and also, perhaps even more importantly, the author of Barry and the Boys and the newly released in paperback Welcome to Terrorland. Daniel, welcome back to our airwaves here.
Hey, pleasure to be with you, buddy.
Now, I'm going to be continuing with a series of programs that I've started about some of the background aspects of people running successfully or otherwise during the recently concluded presidential campaign. But we have not touched bases, I think, since the early part of the summer. And certainly you have not been idle, and you have been tracking a whole lot of misdeeds vis-a-vis airlines and air proprietaries. Why don't you sort of fill in for people that might be new to the broadcast, Daniel, why don't you fill in how you first began investigating these intelligence-connected air flights and air fleets in southern Florida?
Oh, wow. How far back do you want to go?
Well, you know, in other words, the Otta-Hilliard connection was basically what focused you on that, and in turn it sort of grew out of your previous work on Barry and the Boys and then looking into
Okay. You know, there is a concept that I've heard about called the never-ending scandal, and what I track is the never-ending scandal is the same people involved over and over again in scandal after scandal after scandal. So there's Wally Hilliard, who owned the terror flight school in Florida that trained terrorists. I'm a guy who is up to his neck in international intrigue, shall we say, not to mention international organized crime. It just keeps popping up, or people associated with him do. And the drug running that was apparently going on through Venice, Florida, while the terrorists were here, is still being carried out on a, I guess, quasi-official basis out of other West Florida locations. St. Petersburg, it turns out. 2 years ago, a DC-9 was caught with 5.5 tons of cocaine in the Yucatan. And I began following that story closely because the plane was registered to a company in St. Petersburg. And then I discovered that the company had masqueraded, the plane had been painted to impersonate Homeland Security aircraft. Then less than a year ago, another plane went down, American plane went down in the Yucatan with 4.5 tons of cocaine or 4+ tons of cocaine. And it wasn't impersonating a U.S. government aircraft. It had been one. It had been used by the CIA and the DEA to ferry people back and forth to Colombia as part of Plan Colombia. So these two planes going down in Mexico led the Mexican government to discover, apparently with the help of the DEA, that both planes had been purchased by Mexican drug cartels using money laundered through the same way, through a bank in Miami and a bunch of currency exchanges in Mexico, and that indeed almost 100 planes had been purchased using this money laundering. But once again, because we have no American drug lords, none of the American owners of the planes that had been turned over to Mexican drug cartels were prosecuted or have been prosecuted because they're apparently all innocent of any knowledge or wrongdoing. A glance at the owners of the planes shows that they have a lot of connections to each other. They've been in business together, and some of them have conspired together to defraud the public of, you know, as much as $300 million in one financial scam that was led by Adnan Khashoggi. But none of them have gotten prosecuted. So, I'm doing a book and finishing a documentary on that. Book's called Bushfellas, and the documentary's called The New American Drug Lords. And out of the corner of my eye, as I'm in Miami shooting interviews, I noticed this other scandal called Suitcase Gate that's going on. And Suitcase Gate, if you haven't heard of it, most people haven't. I mean, it was a big deal in Miami and Latin America, and it disrupted U.S. diplomatic relations with a half a dozen nations in South America, including Bolivia, Venezuela, and I believe Ecuador, and certainly Argentina. Okay, but it just, you know, the real news just doesn't make the papers much anymore. At any rate, Suitcase Gate involved a guy in Miami who got caught going through customs in Buenos Aires, Argentina, 3 days before Hugo Chavez was due to arrive last year. He got caught with a suitcase full of $800,000 that was supposed to be passed on to the husband and wife team that have apparently been running Argentina as a protectorate for the past half dozen years. People whose names I had never heard before, Nestor and Cristina Fernandez. I guess they're the latest, Eva and Juan Perón down there. So this suitcase with 800 grand gets busted because it hadn't been declared. It's going through customs. It's on its way to the president of Argentina. Everybody's very, very embarrassed. And the story is that the suitcase was money from Hugo Chavez that he was using as a hello, as a bribe, as was the U.S. allegation that Chavez has been spreading oil money around South America to, sway people to his point of view and away from George W. Bush's point of view. Apparently the two of them have been at loggerheads for some time. So we've got actors in this scandal going on trial in Miami, okay? And it's and basically the allegation is that Hugo Chavez sent people up to the U.S. to convince the guy that had been carrying the suitcase to keep his mouth shut. And the U.S. busted these guys they sent up as illegal foreign agents, okay? They hadn't registered with the U.S. government, so they couldn't be here attempting to do Venezuela's business. The whole thing got pretty interesting, but my end of it, the end of it that I found really interesting. Well, one of the things I found really interesting is you'll just eat this up because it's red meat to you. But let me tell you the other one first. The plane that they had been. I'm always interested in planes. Okay, I have learned that the easiest way to find out what's going on is to go out to an airport, write down the end numbers of planes flying in and out, look up who's on them, and try to figure out what the heck they're doing. Okay, that's like one easy way to keep track of what's going on because a certain intrigue transpires via airplanes because of the distances involved in getting involved in intrigue worldwide.
You keep it in plain sight, so to speak.
Exactly. So I got interested in the plane that had flown the money into Argentina because it was an American plane. And yet it had been chartered in Venezuela, and it was apparently not owned here then. But it's like I got an N number that's illegal for it to have. And first thing I discover is that it's a Citation 10. It's a top of the line business jet. It flies just barely shy of supersonic speeds. It's faster than anything the Border Patrol has, for example. So that it's good for that kind of run. Discovered that the plane's N number was on another plane that was being is on another. It's like two planes with one license plate, two cars with one license plate number.
Mm-hmm.
That there was another plane that had the same N number, that had the same license plate number, and it's owned by the CIA, by a CIA contractor.
Well, how about that?
And it's being flown even as we speak in Iraq for the CIA. So, if this was the first time it had ever transpired that a plane that got in trouble had an N number that another plane had that had connections to the CIA, you know, perhaps one would say, what a coincidence. But this is not the first time that that's happened. And it happened relatively recently with a plane that was busted with, found in Nicaragua, where the pilots had bailed out. It had a couple tons. This is 5 years ago, and it's got an N number that belongs to a plane that's flying for the CIA in Colombia at the time. So this is another. We're looking for tactics that will fool the public when things go wrong. Okay, so for instance, if you're the CIA, you don't register your Gulfstreams. You know, they don't bear the CIA logo on the side, and they aren't registered to CIA Inc. in McLean, Virginia. Okay, they're liable to be registered to ABC International, and then when ABC International gets busted, the registration changes to International ABC Incorporated. You follow what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
There's
yep.
a million ways to do this.
By the way, let me just briefly remind the listeners about how this investigative tour de force began. And it really began with Barry and the boys, and you're looking into some of the Florida drug fleets and the clandestine operations. But really, the new investigative series, plural, that you've been involved in stems from your work on the milieu through which Mohammed Atta and company infiltrated in Florida. So
yeah,
this is
where everything happens worldwide. I mean, it's where the overworld meets the underworld. Okay, it's the netherworld. I mean, it's where things get done. It's when you want to know why things happen, it's where you go to look. Whether you're in Israel or Moscow or China, I would think, because there's a certain view of the world that the media of any country tries its citizens to convince is the way things are, and then there's the way things are.
Well, the way things are is the way that we've been attempting to, you with your investigative work and myself with this radio program have been trying to shed light into the darkness. And there's an awful lot of darkness. And sometimes when you're wielding that little flashlight, it seems pretty intimidating. But that's what we're trying to do.
Well, sure. So here's the part that you'll get off on. The plane was flying a charter and was landing at a company that had been owned by a major international drug trafficker, suspected of being a major international drug trafficker, who wasn't even Argentinian. He had been Israeli, a close advisor to Carlos Menem, the president of Argentina, I guess, in the 80s and 90s. Suspected of being a major drug trafficker, and although he was the second most powerful person in the country of Argentina for, I guess, much of a decade, there were no pictures of him. And when he was discovered on the beach in Argentina by a photojournalist down there, and the photojournalist took a picture of him, this guy had the photojournalist killed.
That'll certainly that'll keep the paparazzi on their toes, huh?
And this guy's other distinction is that he was very close to the generals in the 1980s who were disappearing people.
This is the so-called dirty war, which
right.
In the 70s and the 80s actually is viewed as formally having been discontinued following the fall of the junta after the Falklands War. But, yeah, that's the much ballyhooed dirty war. And the listeners to this program are very familiar with some of the tributaries running through that, including Operation Condor, the assassination of Orlando Letelier, and even the Argentinian branch of the P2 Lodge, because a lot of those junta generals were actually members of the Propaganda Due Lodge, a crypto-fascist government that was largely running Italy for a long time and that had branches around the world. So this fellow is turning up on a landscape that is rife with intrigue.
His name was Alfredo Yabron.
Oh, he is a very Alfredo. That is really interesting because I've done a whole lot of work on him.
Well, damn it, Dave! I knew you'd get excited when I told you about it.
Oh, and this goes. Oh, this is really this is very interesting because he is from the Yabron and was it called Yomagate, I think. He was actually, I think, married at one point. He was very close to the Menems, very, very close.
That's right.
And also to Manzor El-Kassar. And his name crops up in connection with the AMIA bombing in Argentina, in which an Israeli cultural or Israeli record center was blown up in 94, and in connection with the bombing of the Israeli embassy there in 1992, there are evidentiary tributaries running between the AMIA bombing and actions or events such as the Oklahoma City bombing, the first and second World Trade Center attacks. So that is a very, very interesting Alfredo Yabron. You know what I'll have to do? I'm going to have to dig up some of the work that I've done and send that to you because that is a very, very interesting individual and somebody that I've talked about it. Wow, that is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that's where the plane went, rolled right up to the hangar of a company called Royal Class, which is owned by Daniel Yebron, the son of Alfredo Yebron, who inherited everything when Alfredo was discovered with a bullet-ridden face half dozen years ago. Basically, when Alfredo Yebron had the photojournalist who took his picture murdered, the jig was up as far as he was concerned. Okay, I mean, that was the point at which public outrage in Argentina reached a point at which he could no longer be. I mean, he probably just should have moved to Israel at that point, but who knows why he didn't. Yeah. So here's a guy. Here's an Israeli. Okay, suspected of being in the drug business. It's his plane that's flying in the 800 grand, and so suddenly, Hugo Chavez's claim that he's being set up doesn't seem so far-fetched, because the plane's got CIA connections. Okay,
Daniel, there's a question here. Are you sure that Alfredo Yebron was of Israeli extraction?
Yes, really.
Because I'm trying to think of Yomagate, because Manzer
El-Kassar. Absolutely, because I had never heard of Alfredo Yebron. Okay,
uh-huh. What's your source on that? Or if you can discuss the reason
it's all public source.
Uh-huh.
You can look it up.
That's what I'd like to do.
I went at it from who owned. It was a charter flight, okay. I mean, and again, this is how it was chartered by petroleum company in Venezuela,
mm-hmm.
And the charter was owned. It's called Royal Class, and Royal Class is in Argentina, and they're owned by Alfredo Yebron, or mm-hmm. they were until Alfredo Yebron turned up dead. Now they're owned by his son Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
And the plane had been flying that run with that guy a bunch of other times. I mean, this was a regular money laundry going on.
Yeah, well, the operator. The reason I question that. I'm not casting aspersions on what you're
sure.
doing here. But the one of the interesting things when I was exploring Yebron and Yomagate and Menem and the AMIA bombing, Carlos Menem's family, or maybe it was his ex-wife's family, but I think it was Menem's family and the family of Manzer El-Kassar, a drug trafficker used in the Iran-Contra affair, also a major terror supplier. And Alfredo Yebron were all from this tiny little town. They're all from the same town in Syria, which is Yabrud, I think, but I'm not positive. Which does not necessarily mean that Yebron could not have claimed Jewish roots and they're become an Israeli citizen, because that's one of the things that makes Israel something of a hotbed of intrigue. Because anybody who can claim with any degree of credence to have Jewish heritage can go there, become a citizen. And the result being that one of the results of that is that you have a tremendous amount of organized crime activity in Israel, including various syndicates from the former Soviet Union, Russian and otherwise. But I'd be interested to find out more about that, because it's one of the things that's so interesting about Alfredo Yebron is that you have here. This is all taking place in Argentina. And yet here is this cabal that are composed of people from Syria and the Alawite sect there, and involved in all kinds of things, from drug trafficking. Manzer El-Kassar's name crops up in connection with the Pan Am 103 bombing, and their evidentiary tributaries running between Pan Am 103 and some of the events that Alfredo Yebron figure, but fascinating. So the never-ending scandal has manifested itself again.
Well, and there you go. I mean, that's basically when you said, "How did you come to be doing what you're doing today?" Or whatever you're investigating today. That's just it. One thing leads to another, leads to another, leads to another, leads to another. And since very few of these miscreants are ever brought to justice and then forced to cease their activity. The same people keep turning up over and over again. And that is indeed what we see here. I will give you one other way in which what's going on, right, and what this suitcase case. So this suitcase case, it was like a major international diplomatic incident. The American ambassador was expelled from Venezuela and from Bolivia. I think we did the same, blah, 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 everybody's shouting, and I think it's probably cooled down or is beginning to. During the trial, the allegation was that the Venezuelan general who is in charge of Venezuelan military intelligence is a drug trafficker.
I can't believe that.
Isn't that shocking?
Yep. By the way, for people who may have just tuned into the program and never heard it before, I'm being facetious. The subject of the intelligence community, our intelligence services and other countries' intelligence services in the world narcotics traffic, that's something I've been talking about for decades.
Well, see, now you're going to die because the source of the allegation that the Venezuelan general, who no doubt has mirrored shades and looks the part, and who's in head of the military, the source of the allegation that he's in drug trafficking is a drug trafficker that we caught 2 years ago. And when we caught him, he was flying a plane that was owned by Skyway Aircraft in St. Petersburg, Florida.
Aha. Uh-huh. And that, of course, is one of the companies that you have been tracking for
That's
us
correct.
All this time.
That's correct.
In fact, I think one of our interviews was called My Way or the Skyway, was titled.
And it turns out that Skyway Aircraft in St. Petersburg, Florida, has exported 9 planes to Venezuela since 2003 or 2004, the past 5 years, 9 planes, of which 6 have been caught within about a month or 2 months of being exported with multi-ton loads of drugs. And yet, these guys are walking around. Now, here's an interesting thing. The people in St. Petersburg got a little upset about all this. International drug trafficking taking place right under their noses at their airport. And of all things, the local Fox affiliate did a story, a news story. And the reporter... I mean, it's funny. The reporter, I mean, this will be in my documentary. The reporter, God bless him, I guess local Fox reporters are you know, who knows, but they're seemingly regular. This guy can't believe it because he goes around to all the government agencies at the airport and says, hey, this company here has sold, you know, three, four planes to drug traffickers. What are you going to do about it? And nobody's in charge. The FAA says they're not in charge. TSA says they're not in charge. Homeland Security says they're not in charge. The DEA says they're not in charge. They're not. In other words, this is and this perfectly mirrors, I believe, what has just happened with this nation's economy.
I you took the words almost right out of my mouth.
Absolutely. There are these are scams that are run by elite deviants with their fingers close to the levers of power in this country, and they can do things like this.
Mm-hmm.
They know there is no federal agency charged with stopping you or I, or certainly Skyway Aircraft in St. Petersburg, Florida, from exporting aircraft to drug traffickers overseas. There's nothing to stop them. Now, Fox News, in this little piece they did, interviewed this very funny county commissioner in Pinellas County, where St. Petersburg Airport is. And this guy's going, hey, every time I fly, I got to take my damn shoes off. I got to take my belt off. They're frisking me. And yet, you know, we got this stuff going on right under our noses, and we can't do anything about it.
Well, I think it really does mirror what's been happening on the economic / political landscape as a whole. One of the presumptions that an awful lot of people operate on, and God knows I did for a long time, was that somebody is in point of fact minding the store, and in point of fact, nobody is. I mean, they may be minding the drug store, so to speak, down there in Florida, but there really is not anybody maintaining. There's no parental authority and no discernible adults in the room. I know this was something that I came across initially with the assassination of President Kennedy. You know, you when you study that event, you realize that you're not in Kansas anymore, Toto. And it's true that nobody is minding the store, with the possible exception of the drugstore.
Well, and it's worse. But it's worse than that, Dave. It's worse than that. I mean, with a drug war that annually, I guess, must cost us $20-25 billion at least. I've heard $40 billion. I have no idea what the exact figure is, but it's multi-billions of dollars, a drug war. I mean, we have every right to expect someone would be in charge. Okay, I mean, if you hire a parking commissioner to make sure that there's enough parking places in town, and you give him $1 billion to get the job done, well, it sure as shooting should get done, or there's hell to pay. So I don't think it's that there's nobody in charge. I think that the people in charge are at the foxes in the hen house. I mean, I think that the Barry McCaffreys of this world are well aware of the importance of drug revenue to the off the books transactions of the secret government of the United States of America, don't you? So I don't think it's that, not that there's no one in charge. I think that the people that are in charge are the same people that are, and I don't believe necessarily, Dave. Although now this is pure speculation because I have no way of knowing these people don't talk to me. I wouldn't think it's entirely for their own personal aggrandizement either. There's so much money here that's being made that I'm sure lavish lifestyles are a part of it. But how many boats can you own?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
This is operating in the service of something larger than personal greed, I suspect.
Yeah, no, this obviously Tacitus, I believe it was, said, pecunia nervus belli, money is the sinew of war. Really, money is pretty much the sinew of just about everything. You've got to have X amount of it or you're not going anyplace with anything. And certainly that kind of capital, the kind of capital that can be generated by the drug trade, is a tremendous amount of political power. You know, you take two suitcases full of cocaine or heroin or something like that and worth X number of millions of dollars, you've got enough money in hand to topple a small government. So it's a tremendous amount of power as well as money. And I think that is in all probability the determining factor in helping to keep these things submerged from public view and consequently operating with impunity.
Yeah. And ultimately, I guess the story is, the same old story. I mean, there's always somebody trying to subjugate everybody else. It's not like there's enough for everybody, so why don't we all just take our piece? It's like, okay, we have to keep getting bigger because they're getting bigger and they're planning on taking us over.
Speaking of getting bigger, Daniel, we are almost out of time here. Why don't you clue people in about your website and about the books and the documentary?
Well, I'm working on a new book called Bush Fellas, a new documentary called The New American Drug Lords. MadCowProd.com. Is where my stories appear on an irregular basis. I try once every couple weeks, week or two, but certainly not on a daily basis. And that's it. If anyone out there is interested, I'm sure. You know, the thing is I pretty much, if you like this sort of thing, you know, you pretty much probably already know who I am, don't you think?
Well, we'll see what happens. But Barry and the Boys can be obtained from there, as can the new paperback edition, supplemented paperback edition of Welcome to Terrorland.
And once again, let me just say for all your listeners, please support Dave Emery, because if there's anybody that deserves to make it through the recession, come out the other end, and be a voice for sanity in the future, you know, Dave, I think you deserve the slot. So. Good luck to you, and God bless. This is a tough recession for everyone I know.
Yep, same here. Same here. I'm tightening the belt, quite literally. So, Daniel, thank you for your kind words. This concludes For the Record program number 653, Touching Bases with Daniel Hopsicker. This has been recorded on November 16th of the year 2008. For Daniel Hopsicker, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.